Aloha, Divine Soul. You're listening to the Uplifting Podcast. This is your space for cosmic conversations. I'm your host, Randy Lee, 6-2 sacral generator with the left angle cross of cycles 2. My mission is to make human design and gene keys accessible to anyone who desires to live more fully as their true self. I'm passionate about discovering the nuances within these systems and using them as tools for personal and collective liberation rather than limitation. In this season of the podcast, we're diving deep into the meaning of personal destiny through the lens of the right angle incarnation cross. Each week, I interview guests with different incarnation crosses to uncover the nuances within their design and how these four main gates manifest in their life and color their purpose. If you're a human design nerd like me who loves learning about the system through hearing others' lived experiences, then this podcast is for you. Let's fall more in love with ourselves as we explore the magic within our differentiation. Aloha, Divine Souls, and welcome back to the Uplifting Podcast. In today's episode, we have another great conversation in our series about right angle incarnation crosses, exploring the cross of consciousness. The right angle cross of consciousness is made up of gates 5, 35, 63, and 64, which brings together the themes of experience, rhythm, doubt, and confusion. These are all collective gates and are a perfect balance of sensing and understanding, logic and experience, which contributes significantly to the collective understanding and sheds light on the various patterns that govern our existence. Gate 35 and 64 are part of the sensing circuit, and gate 5 and 63 are part of the understanding circuit in the collective circuitry. Those with the cross of consciousness are on a mission to understand the world around them so they can share their insights with the collective. They're naturally curious and have the patience to wait for the right timing so they can share the wisdom of their experiences with others. Gate 5, the gate of fixed rhythms, located in the sacral center, is what fixes the pattern of all of life. It's present within all life forms, in mammals, bird, fish, reptiles, and even single cells. This is the gate of habits and ritual. Those with this gate thrive with fixed rhythms and routines in their life. Out of this gate emerges a deep sense of trust that comes as a result of everything following a universal flow. It's highly attuned to the deeper patterns of life, including the seasons. Gate 35, the gate of change, located in the throat center, speaks with the voice of I feel, which is usually followed by it's time for change. This gate is very cyclical in nature and always feels ready to try a new experience. This is the hunger for something new. Gate 63, the gate of doubt, located in the head center, is the pressure to seek an answer and question things. This is a naturally skeptical mind that, when given an answer, continues to question the logic. It's the readiness to pay attention to and question whatever feels insecure or uncertain so that it can be understood and evaluated for our future security. Doubt occurs when you sense an inconsistency or weakness in a pattern. This is the doubt that has driven all scientific discoveries. Gate 64, the gate of confusion, is also located in the head center, and this is the mental pressure to make sense out of past events, memories, and images that flood the mind. This is the beginning of the abstract mental process, which is about experiencing the present in order to reflect on it when it has passed. It's a visually abstract gate that's flooded with images that don't appear to make sense and creates confusion. This creates the pressure to try and make sense of the confusion in an attempt to get rid of it. It's important to accept confusion as a part of the process so you can discover new things that will become more clear in their own time. The challenge of this cross is that doubt and confusion can often be turned inwards instead of used in support of the collective. It can also be very impatient and jump into new experiences before the timing is right. The challenge in this incarnation cross lies in knowing when to question and when to trust, when to wait, and when to dive into new experiences. These four gates all fall in mutable signs. Gate 63 in Pisces, 35 in Gemini, 64 in Virgo, and 5 in Sagittarius. In astrology, mutable signs are associated with flexibility, adaptability, and a willingness to change. These signs occur at the end of each season and are known for their ability to transition from one phase to the next. This week on the podcast, I'm joined by Nisha Modi, who's a 3-5 sacral generator with the cross of consciousness 3, to talk about how this energy has manifested in her life. Nisha is a life coach for liberatory dreamers who want to nurture their inner world as much as they want to live in a better one. She values growth, relationships, and liberation, and always dreams of how to cultivate this with the collective. You can find Nisha in her spare time cuddling her cats, collaging, and working on a memoir. Nisha has the 1156 channel of curiosity and the 515 channel of rhythm, with probability view and desire motivation. Nisha has previously been on the podcast back in 2023, where we talked about breaking generational cycles and tools for conscious relating. Her incarnation cross really comes through in that conversation as well. So make sure to check out that episode after this, which I've linked in the show notes. A fun side note that I wanted to mention for anyone who is into the Gene Keys is that Richard Rudd, the creator of the Gene Keys, is a 4-6 generator with the cross of consciousness 3. I'm so excited to dive into this conversation with Nisha on the cross of consciousness. So without further ado, let's dive in. Welcome back, Nisha, to the Uplifting Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Randy.
I'm so excited for you to be here today and to dive into your experience with having the cross of consciousness. So I'd love to just start the conversation with exploring what this incarnation cross means to you and how that understanding might have transformed as you've been in your experiment.
Yeah. So as someone who I've always seen myself as like a thinker and, you know, I remember like being in high school being like, maybe I want to major in philosophy. And then I took like an intro to philosophy class at a community college and I'm like, this is so confusing. Then discovering that, you know, gate of confusion and doubt was really funny to me. But I honestly was like kind of enamored with like just being consciousness, it being something kind of abstract. Even though I'm a Virgo, I still like kind of the abstract nature of things, as well as how it can be applied in a practical, grounded way. So I really liked the name of it. I feel like, you know, just when you hear cross of consciousness, it sounded really cool. I feel like consciousness is the beginning of what it means to be human. So that was really exciting. But then when I found out like the personality gates being 63 and 64 and that being doubt and confusion, I like kind of started judging myself of like just being a confused person who is indecisive. And, you know, that really kind of struck me. I mean, ironically, the reason I got into human design was because I do have a 3-5 profile and I've had like 6 careers. You know, I'm 42 and I've had 6 careers before I turned 40. Doubt and confusion were just like a huge part of my professional journey, which for me, deciding like what I wanted to be when I grew up was like such a big deal for me. So the doubt and confusion in the 3-5 profile, like the 3-5 profile was very validating and the doubt and confusion were almost, I don't want to say invalidating, but I felt this self-judgment about myself. But I think I've over time discovered like the nuance and like the benefits of like doubt and confusion and how one thing I love about like life and thinking and getting to know others is the nuance and is contextualizing our experiences. You know, before we recorded, I was just telling you how I just traveled to Japan and like I was thinking about the culture there and certain dominant things about the culture that are so different from the States. And it's like everything is contextual, you know, and it just made me think about how we try to make things so certain, like this is what's right, this is what's wrong. And like, I don't believe in right or wrong. Like, I don't believe there's like these certain morals that are just like set in stone. You know, I really don't believe that. So the confusion and doubt, I started seeing like in a more positive way.
I love that because I feel like that can be one of the potential challenges for this cross is that doubt and confusion that's turned inward on yourself instead of used towards improving the collective, helping lead the collective forward through making sense of past experiences. And I love that you mentioned you know, what it means to be human, because I feel like this incarnation cross really shows that, especially with gate five being present in like all life forms. You know, it's in mammals, it's in fish, it's in reptiles, it's even in single cells. And so it's like connecting us, grounding us to this like rhythm of life and what it means to be alive and to like the collective experience of being alive. But we can often like turn these energies inward instead of using it for a greater collective good. So I'd love to hear, you know, your experience, especially with 63 and 64, being in an undefined head center, how that might have been a challenge for you, and then how you've seen these gifts of, you know, especially I feel like coming from an undefined center, they can even be bigger gifts because they can bring so much wisdom with it as well. So I'd love to hear your experience with that.
It's really interesting thinking about 63 and 64 from the undefined center. I feel like I have to kind of go to the 535 and defined centers, because one thing that I used to dislike about myself was just like, I'm a person who, like, when I think about 35, like has these all these like ideas and wants to explore things and has these desires, but then I can't do all of it. Like, I mean, I can't do every single idea I have. And so I think then it goes to this, it went to this negative inward place. And I started realizing through human design that like, I can just have ideas and it's okay to have them and they could just be exciting for me. And it's not about actually pursuing every idea I have, that there's so much value in that. And when I share people, like share my ideas with other people, so much like comes out of that, and someone can take that idea and do something with it or influences them. And so many of like these ideas and explorations that I want to have are full of doubt. You know, they're full of questions, I should say. I often say that I don't think it's so much about the answers, but the questions that we ask and the questions other people ask, that is what gives us information about like ideology, about where people are coming from, about their context, about their conditioning. And with gate five, like rhythm, I love that gate. I really love that gate because I think about that through like an ecological sense, like kind of what you were talking about with the different cells and creatures and just like animism. You know, one thing I've gotten really into after I started my own business and doing coaching is like this, the whole like spiritual ecology movement, and just thinking about the interdependence of everything and how all of that has its own rhythm. And so I think that the strength of that channel of rhythm and like the five, and then the 35, which I don't have the full channel, the 515 I do, on that design side, like that body in me that I didn't realize, it's kind of then moving toward like the 63, 64 in some way. It used to be something that I would then fight against myself. And sometimes I still do, you know, I mean, it happens. But now I'm able to kind of just bring it up, put it out there in the world and see how it's received. I have a pretty strong throat center. So like just thinking about how I can use that and utilize that and the gifts of the throat center, and how the almost like the open head being like a way to receive as opposed to something that's like empty or deficient, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you mentioned using these ideas that you have as inspiration for others, because I feel like that really highlights your 1156 channel, that channel of curiosity can, you know, that is full of ideas, but can share it in a way that is, you know, articulated, that can connect with people and really inspire them, you know, through this like stimulating storytelling that you're able to share. And that really being a gift when you can release that pressure to try to take all of those ideas and then make something out of it, initiate from that place instead of just using it as a means of inspiration for others.
Yeah, thank you so much for naming that. And you just like helped me click something that I've been literally thinking about for the last 24 hours. You know, I would say I have like two parts of my work, or like just two parts of my life, I should say, that I love to do. One is I love to write. I am a memoir writer, and I'm, you know, hoping to do some more memoir writing this year. And that's really that 1156. That's that storytelling, talking about my experiences, sharing it with others and wanting it to be received. So the coaching part is the other part of my work, because I love to share my stories, but that, you know, writing and everything can be kind of isolating. And I also love coaching and like helping people, like reflecting things back to them. And I was thinking yesterday that what makes me, and I think a lot of people, better coaches is really just feeling into the energy of the conversation. Like if this person is in like more of a winter season, I'm not going to put them into a summer like, okay, well, let's go. I know, you know, I'm going to like meet them in the winter and like ask them about like where they're at. And I just like, that just clicked for me that like the 5:15 is like that rhythm. Like, what is the energy that's happening now? And how can I align myself with that rhythm so I can meet this person where they're at? And that just being a collective channel and the 11:56, oh my God, this is like wild. I was literally just thinking about it. So I love that reflection because it reminds me, like, those are all my two channels. I don't have any other channels, right? And those are like literally the two things, like the two connections I can make to the two main things I love doing, which is storytelling as well as coaching. And then aligning that with the 63-64 and the doubt and the confusion. You know, I was just telling my partner the other day that sometimes I think that my story isn't messed up enough to be published. Like, I need to have more trauma or whatever. And then I thought about like other like memoirs that I've read that like don't have, you know, like, but they're written in a specific way. And it kind of made me think that like I was once again focusing on like some certainty.
I love that. And I feel like it does show, like you said, you feel like you have these two sides, which in a way you do, being a split definition. You have that Ajna throat connection with the 11:56 and then the sacral to G with the 5:15 and those really coming together in the work that you do, which is also so much about relating to other people and your incarnation cross being the third version coming in the third quarter, which is all about relationships and relating and bonding. You know, with 64, it is that energy to like reflect on these past experiences and like gain that wisdom from it. But it's very like visual. There's all these images that can be flooded, which can bring up that confusion. And it's really learning to trust that like eventually all of that will make sense if you can just allow it. So I'd love to hear like how you work with that energy of confusion, with it being in your sun and especially being in this third quarter.
Yeah, thank you so much for naming that relating part. For a long time, I would say literally till recently, I was calling myself a relational healing and life coach. I just kind of noticed that I don't think people like understood it, to be quite honest. So I shifted to being a life coach for liberatory dreamers and leaders because that's who I love to coach. But part of being a liberatory dreamer to me is understanding how things are interdependent and how we're all connected and what that relating is, and bringing astrology into it because I know that's part of human design. Like, I have a Libra stellium in my third house. So I have like five planets in Libra. So even though it's not part of my big three, it is so prominent. It really colors my chart. And so that relational aspect is so central to who I am. And the fact that that is in my third quarter, I think says so, so much, because me having so much collective circuitry, to me, it's just like, it makes sense. You know, like I said, the storytelling I do, I want to do it so people receive it. I want to do so people can connect and relate to it. Recently, I've been like on TikTok just sharing random stories. And like, what I love is not just sharing it, but like how people receive it and like continuing the conversation and that giving me other ideas, you know. When it comes to like that confusion, now I'm excited to be a little mixed up in my head about certain things. Like the other day, I actually shared something about the word deserve and how, you know, deserve often implies merit and we feel like we have to like earn things. Like, and I, as someone who, like, for me growing up, the biggest part of my life that made me feel worthy was academic achievement. I was good at it and I was like, this is me. I'm smart. I'm in smart classes. I'm going to do well on a test. I'm going to go to a good school. So meritocracy was just like so important to me, but it really like took away other types of intelligence that are not as like lauded in traditional education systems. And the relational intelligence and the relational skills to me are actually like what I remember about myself. Actually, I have a really interesting story that I think speaks so much to my design and my astrology. When I was like in first grade, I didn't even remember this, but they had asked my mom, like, and my parents if I wanted to skip ahead to a grade. And like I said, I loved school. Like, academic achievement was so important to me. But my mom said that she asked me and I said no, because I want to be with my friends. And so I'm telling you, in first grade, like, I cared. I remember when I was like doing a math test and I would always get 20 out of 20. And one time, like, it was a time test. And I still swear to this day that the teacher made it shorter because she wanted me to get a couple wrong. And this is, you know, whatever is in my 6-year-old head. But I know that I cared very much about academic achievement. And yet I prioritized the relational part in that decision. And it's funny, there were times I'm like, why did you listen to me? I'm like, I was just six. What did I know? But now I'm like, no, that was like who I was. And, you know, as much as I have like my complaints about how I was parented, I am really glad that my parents asked for my consent and that they listened to me, you know, because to me, that was that relational aspect to be like, no, you know, it's so important for me to be with my friends. And like, I have a lot of parts of my life. I'm divorced. My dad passed away. Like both of those things happened within a year of each other. And, you know, so many people will be like, wow, you like, you know, you've shared your story about that. You're so brave. And, you know, one thing I often say is like, one of the big reasons I was able to do that was because I had the support of my friends. I had the support of my family, you know, and being someone who's South Asian and divorced, like I was worried what people within my family, especially in family friend circle would think, but I like never got much crap about it, to be honest. So it is that those relationships that have really, really supported me. And if anything, made me less confused about my decisions. Not that I needed everyone's approval, but it does help when you're supported. And nonetheless, you do feel more safe.
Just because the mind isn't designed to be our decision-making mechanism doesn't mean it doesn't have its own unique role and power. The true power and purpose of the mind that's often not discussed in human design is the development and proper use of outer authority. Outer authority is how the mind uses its gifts and wisdom to be of service to others once it has been liberated from being the decision maker. This is why inner authority is so important, because it's the catalyst for even deeper levels of transformation and the development of outer authority. Strategy and authority are emphasized so much in human design because they lay the foundation for the process of your differentiation to unfold. The true power of human design comes from living it. But the reality is that living your design is often much more challenging and nuanced than what is discussed in the textbooks or an Instagram post. This is why I love to explore the nuances within each person's chart so that you can live more fully as your true self and access your full cognitive potential, because this is how I believe we can create change in the world. I've created a new masterclass series, Liberate the Mind, where I share with you two of my best advanced trainings that I've created for my program, Chart Reading Mastery. In this series, you'll learn how to liberate your mind through differentiating your inner authority so you can develop your unique outer authority and create value for those who are on your fractal line. Liberated Mind is available for free until April 30th, when it will become a paid offering. Go to the link in the show notes to get access now. Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you brought up the piece around prioritizing kind of like the logical aspect of this incarnation cross, right? And I think that that's something that we often do, especially like Western societies. It's like the logic and the traditional like knowledge and gaining those skills and mastering it over time. But what I see this cross is it's like this beautiful merging of both sides of the collective, which is logical and then the experience. And with your sun in 64, the third quarter, it's like that abstract energy that's like, yeah, but also logic can only take us so far. You know, it's also we learn so much through the experience, and so much of experience is about being in relationship with others. And like you mentioned, that intersectionality, which I feel like is also such a big part of your work. So I would love to hear how you see that intersectionality coming through in relationship to the cross of consciousness.
So intersectionality, I mean, I think it was first defined by Kimberly Crenshaw in terms of like thinking about our different intersections of identity and how that connects to oppression, and very much being like the like foundation of like critical race theory. I like to think about it like, yes, from that sense, but also just like any type of context we're in, you know, and that could be class, that, you know, I think about a lot about how, you know, I'm a daughter of immigrants. So not only is there a generational difference between me and my parents and, you know, my aunts and uncles and, you know, family friends even, but there's a cultural difference. Even though I come from the same lineage culturally, I'm an American. I was born and raised in America. When I go to India, I don't feel like I'm Indian. I feel like I'm an American, you know, so much difference is there. And I even think about that intersectionality. You know, I'm like, if I was born in India and raised in India, like, what would I be like? You know, like, yes, I'd still be me. But how would the context, the intersection of living in a completely different culture where the way people think, the way people move about their lives, and not just that, like my parents grew up in Mumbai, if I lived in Mumbai versus like a smaller town, like all of these things really matter. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. It was very white. And then by the time I was in high school, I noticed like so much more diversity. Those are just things I think about a lot. I actually met someone randomly through the internet who is also Indian American and went to my high school, but she is like 20 years younger than me. And she was talking about how diverse our suburb is. And I was like, actually, it is now. But when I was younger, like it was not like that. And she was really surprised. She was just talking about how much she loves it. And I was like, wow, we are two Indian, not just Indian, both Gujarati, like from the state of Gujarat in India. Two people who have a very similar background, but grew up in a different context, even if it was in the same location, it was a different time, right? So I think about that stuff a lot with different experiences, but also how that influences the person we are and the stories we tell and the relationships we make. And I'm always so curious about talking to other people about that and how that has shaped not just who they are, but like shaped their reality, you know? And so connecting it to the cross of consciousness, I think that's what, I mean, what I just said, that's like, it's just thinking about like, how confusing is it that like I met someone with a very similar cultural background than me who literally grew up down the road from me, went to my same high school. Like we met through podcasting. We both had at that time, I don't have this podcast anymore, but both had Asian American centered podcasts. Yet we have different stories to tell. And that confusion to me is exciting. Like that is so exciting to me, seeing that difference and asking about that difference, but also feeling so connected to this person too. So that's like one specific example of how that connects in terms of that intersectionality and the interdependence. I think sometimes like in terms of spiritual ecology and spiritual ecology, which I'm not like an expert on, it's just something I've been exploring, and just interdependence in general, is that I think sometimes it's really romanticized and glorified, like, oh, the earth, like everything's connected, but like crazy shit happens too, you know, and on the earth, like wild connections and like there are parasites and there's things that like are not so cute, right? And so it's one of those things that I have to remind myself to know that like it's not perfect. It's not just like spirit, it's like not some perfect answer about the earth, that there are all these, like, I don't know if they're, you would call them an anomaly. I think it's part of the earth. And it makes things confusing. And it's really hard because we want to be so certain. And I'm definitely want certainty. Like it's something I struggle with a lot. And at the same time, it really excites me that it's not a perfect answer.
I love that. And what I really hear come through is this idea of being able to hold multiple truths, hold the nuance, hold that like your experience can be true and somebody can be from a very similar background, go through very similar experiences and be completely different. And that can be their truth. You know, a lot of what we're seeing today is this quest for the ultimate truth, the one truth. You know, I think that it's because we want that certainty because it feels safe. But I feel like this cross of consciousness is like showing us that part of the human experience is learning to hold multiple truths and to honor each individual truth. And it doesn't take away from our own lived experience, if that makes sense.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it just reminds me of like difference. You know, I talk about how, yes, a lot of, you know, South Asian daughters of immigrants really connect to me, but we can have a completely different ideology about life, you know, and yet we have similarities with our experience. So that difference is something to, I don't want to say negotiate, but be with, like, wow, this exists, you know? And I could also meet someone who has a very different background than me, ethnically, class-wise, where we have a very similar ideology, right? Like, what does that mean? I don't know. It's confusing. But at the same time, thinking that everyone has to think the same way or be the same way or move through the world makes room for that story. Like, what's the story behind this? You know what I mean? And it also, I think, makes room for our design. How does that manifest through these intersections of our identities, through these intersections of our experiences, through the intersections of the ways of knowing? I mean, I used to be a librarian. So one of the big things I think about is like epistemology, how we know what we know. And I think that is so reflected in, I mean, just me wanting to be a librarian, you know, even choosing that profession is a reflection of wanting to like know how we know things and what influences that and how there is so much confusion in that. I mean, I think I know I'm not alone in that, like after October 7th, like so many differences in this world were highlighted, like people who I thought a certain way did it. And I was like, oh my God. It's hard in our bodies to be with difference. Like it brings up a lot with our nervous systems and the ways we think and like who we want to associate with, where we might need boundaries and where we might want to engage with someone to be like, okay, well, let's talk about this. And it was such a confusing time and it was very overwhelming and it still is in so many ways. Like this hasn't ended, but I've come to a point where yes, it is overwhelming. And I also think like what is mine to do and how is that going to be supportive to the collective as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would love to hear how you see your 3-5 profile come through in your incarnation cross.
Yeah. So like I said, I got into human design because of my profile. It felt so validating because for so much of my life, I thought something was like wrong with me because I have chosen so many professions. I couldn't figure it out. Like, especially within my culture, you know, the school I went to, you know, even though like I grew up in different diverse environments, honestly, some of my closest friends from high school and college are South Asian American, you know? And so just seeing people within my culture, like they're doctors, they're lawyers, they are excelling within one line within the business world, like or whatever. I knew that it was okay that I wanted to do something different. I always was. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't make me feel like less than. So the 3-5 profile is first what got me into human design and got me to say like, oh, I just like learn by having to do stuff. And I just like dive in and I just do stuff. And I've had people tell me like, I actually like really admire that about you, like how you could just do that. Like, I'm too scared. I was like, oh, interesting. So what I've like berated myself for in the past is something that people admire, which, you know, goes back to just its perspective, right? And so to be quite honest, I don't know if I have ever consciously connected it to the cross of consciousness. I've kind of almost seen it as separate. I remember Jazz is a 3-5 generator like me, and she says your failures are your successes. And that was really helpful for me. And I think sometimes confusion I've equated with failure. It's not failure. You know, I think like, oh, I've been confused, like I'm keep changing professions, like I can't figure it out, like means I'm a failure. But what if those are my successes? And, you know, I've been a speech therapist. I've been a librarian. Before that, I was a consultant. I was a recruiter. And when I think about now, I'm a coach. It's not like I'm doing anything different. It's just a different context I'm doing stuff in. I'm still connecting with people. I'm still making relationships with them. I'm still listening to them and listening to them closely, seeing what they need, seeing how I can accommodate, seeing what are some good questions to ask them. Like I had to do that in all of those jobs. It's just, one was in a business context, one was in a clinical context, one was in an educational context. So really, it made me realize that even though like I've tried all these different things, like I had there is such a thread, you know, between everything I've done. So the confusion and the trial and error were gifts, and it showed the success of these skills that I had.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like too, there might have been some projections that you were receiving from others around that made you feel like, oh, I have to find my thing. It's not safe for me to go through this trial and error and try all these different things. And maybe some projections around those experiences that you were going through and your own unique rhythm with having that 515. It's like you're going to have your own rhythm, your own kind of cycle, but there might be some projections, I feel like, from others around that makes you then doubt your own rhythm and your own way of doing things.
Ooh, yeah. I never thought about that. Thank you so much for naming that. 100%. It like activates that doubt. And with the empty, like open head, then it just can really turn inward. Wow. Yeah. 100%. That projection and other people's. And sometimes it's other people's projections. Sometimes it's my perception of other people's perception, right? Like they're probably going to think this, you know, it's interesting. Even though I've changed professions, I would say overall, my parents were usually supportive of it, but then I have heard comments of my mom being like, you should have just stayed working. Like I worked for Accenture. You should have stayed. Cause I feel like for her, it was like something that she could explain to other people, especially within our culture. And when I was a speech therapist, it was like really easy for her to explain that to other people. So sometimes I think she sees it as a reflection of her. And then that is something I have turned inward on myself, you know? So yeah, I think that is so, so very true.
Yeah, I find the fifth line so fascinating. you know, in my relationships with fifth lines, I can see where I've projected onto them and like learning where does that responsibility lie? Like I have to check myself for making those projections. But I think also for fifth lines too, it's also being like, okay, I don't have to take on that projection.
Totally. I really like, I forget who first said this to me. It was about the open centers, but I think it can go for the projections too. It's like observe, don't absorb. While you were talking, it also made me think about how one way that I feel that I've been able to use my gifts and my design is also thinking, who do I want projections from? Who is my audience that I want? When I tell my stories, I'm like, oh, like if you're a child of immigrants or like have, if you were someone who achieved really well in school, like I want your projections. Like tell me what you think, you know? Or like if, you know, people are having challenges with certain parts of their life or people are liberatory dreamers and I talk about what that means to me, I want your projections. Like that is actually really cool thinking about that and the like confusion. Cause like, I'm like, not only do I want those projections, cause like I want that to add to the big bank of whatever is in my open head, you know, so that that does filter to my defined ajna and gets expressed in some way. And so I actually never thought about that till you were just talking right now. And that's like super exciting for me to think about it in that way that can be like super useful and like just really exciting.
Yeah, it's almost like you're also collecting other people's stories and other people's experiences to help you then contextualize and like build a greater understanding.
Yeah, a greater understanding that ends up kind of being like a body of work, but a body of work that's also still for the collective.
Yeah, that was also built from the collective, from those collective experiences. I love that.
100%. 100%. Yeah, I love that too.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. I would love to just close with hearing one of your biggest insights or aha moments when it comes to one of these gates in the cross of consciousness or the cross of consciousness itself.
Honestly, this whole conversation has been a big aha moment. One thing like I think that's really cool is that like my design side gates are from defined centers, but my personality gates are from my undefined head. And so making that connection has been an aha moment for how not to turn inward with myself. And I think what I just shared about the five line and the confusion, that actually right now, like literally in this moment was a big aha moment. So that's a big, very prevalent for me right now, resonant.
I love that. I love that. I love just being able to have these conversations and see the ways that this cross is already showing up for us. Because I think sometimes we feel like we have to do something differently or try to make it happen. But I think really when it comes through most clearly is when we just sit back and observe the way that it's already alive and active in our life.
Totally. And I'm so glad to have this conversation with you because that just like adds to realizing how there's nothing to do, which is pretty exciting. It's like, oh, cool. Like feels like a weight off my shoulders that I don't have to do anything, that it's just happening. But then also being aware of it makes me like notice it in other ways, which to me is really, really just fun.
Yeah. And then in that, you can see the thread that has been woven throughout your entire life where these energies have been present and have informed the decisions that you make and just how you move throughout life.
Yeah, that's so, so true. And seeing that thread, I think, is not only a reflection of my design, but also it makes me think about like what's to come as well.
I love that. Well, I would love to hear what you see coming for yourself and anything that you would like to share about what's going on for you and how people can find you and connect with you and all the things.
Yeah, for sure. So mostly active on Instagram at Healing Hype Girl. I am going to be opening one-on-one spots for coaching. So if you see yourself as a liberatory dreamer or leader, I would love to support you in really teasing that out, whether it's thinking about a project you want to do and what's stopping you, thinking about relationships and how that those relationships in your life are affecting your life as a liberatory dreamer, as well as like what's happening in the world and how that can actually discourage us sometimes from having liberatory dreams. So all of those together, I'm like super, super excited about. And my website is nishaland.com. Feel free to go there and see more about my work and read about my stories. I have my essays written there too. A lot of people have actually come to me because they've read my work and they really resonate with that. So like I said, those are my two things, writing and coaching. So, and they're both very, very connected. So those are the ways to kind of get to know me a little better.
I love that. And I feel like that work is so needed right now in the world, because I think it's hard right now with the old crumbling, but like not really knowing, again, that confusion, that doubt, that uncertainty of like, what is next? And how do we hold this space of uncertainty while maintaining a vision of something that is better and more liberatory for the collective?
Yes. Yes, that's all I'm going to say about that, 100%.
Yeah, I just feel like it's your cross right there. So thank you so much, Nisha, just for being you and for sharing your gifts with the world.
Oh, thank you so much, Randy. I appreciate you.
It's been a pleasure. Aloha. Thank you so much for sharing a piece of your day with me. If you found value in the podcast and want to support the creation of future episodes, it would mean so much if you made a contribution of $5 to $10 to the podcast. This podcast survives on your contributions, and every amount is greatly appreciated. You can also rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen from. This helps get the podcast out to more people who could benefit from this information. I believe that human design and gene keys should be knowledge that we all have access to. So if this episode resonated with you, it would mean so much to me if you shared it with someone you love. If you would like to connect with me further, follow me on Instagram at @IamRandyLee. Feel free to send me a message on Instagram, send me an email, or join my free community, Embodiment by Design, where I have a ton of free resources to support you in your human design and gene keys experiment. Thank you for being a part of this community and for your commitment to embodying your authentic self. I see you. I recognize the inner work that you are doing. It never goes unnoticed. Until next time, Soul Family, stay uplifted.